The poison of corporate-controlled information is pervasive within the American media landscape, which makes the Laura Flanders Show one of the most important places that we can go to understand how power works, the reality around us, and how to resist. This is Chris Hedges, and I listen to the Laura Flanders Show.
Go to patreon.com/theLF Show and become a member.
Years ago, Spain fell under a 30-year dictatorship after right beat left in a brutal civil war. All these years later, the legacy of that conflict lives on in discussions of the contrast between authoritarianism and colonialism and control on the one hand, and democracy, self-determination, and social economy on the other. So too lives on the legacy of resilience. And that's the subject of today's show.
Social change and systems change tend to go hand in hand. As a journalist, I've seen again and again that social movements are most effective when they give people not just the permission, but the means to transform their reality. In the summer of 2019, I came to Spain to learn how two of the region's most brutally repressed under the 36-year dictatorship of Francisco Franco built the world's largest worker-owned co-ops. How did their community-based model of business help them resist and survive under dictatorship? And how do co-ops and cooperation function today? The Mondragon Federation of the Basque region was founded in 1956. Today, it's Spain's 10th largest business, with well over 80,000 employees, and yet more overseas. American Fred Freundlich came to Mondragon 25 years ago to study the social impact of worker-owned businesses. Today, he's a professor at Mondragon University, a university funded by the Federation.
In the early years, the history of Mondragon, its beginnings, go back to the period in Spain right after the Spanish Civil War, which was 1936 to 39. So the Basque Country had sided against the dictator Franco, who won the war. Franco's government designated it as occupied enemy territory. The rest of the world was involved in the Second World War, so no one was paying attention to desperate situation in Spain or in the Basque Country in particular, characterized by destruction from the war, polarized society, political repression, dictatorship. And into this situation comes a priest, Arizmendi Arrieta, and he had a sort of a broad vision for social change based on Catholic social doctrine, which is not about preparing oneself for the next life, but creating God's kingdom on earth, so to speak. So he had this vision based on human dignity. Everyone should have sort of a minimally decent standard of living. Solidarity, people should take care of each other, share when necessary, mutual and individual responsibility, hard work. And he decided, he came to the conclusion after working on this vision in reality in the community, on the ground for many years, that this vision needed to be taken into the economy, into businesses. So business became viewed for a generation or more as a place for progressive people to express their values. It's not enough on its own as a response to fascism or authoritarianism anywhere, but it's a significant part. Now we're talking about 98 to 110 or so cooperative organizations, almost all of them worker cooperatives, where the people who work in the enterprise are the members and the owners. They employ 74,000 people, roughly, all over the world.
Fred and I are not the only Americans drawn to the Basque Country to learn about worker-owned co-ops and their potential to transform society. My trip to Spain coincides with a delegation led by the Democracy Collaborative and California's Beneficial State Bank. They're both U.S. groups dedicated to building new economic systems in the U.S. Democracy Collaborative Executive Vice President Marjorie Kelly speaks with Mikel Lizamiz at Ulma Packaging Cooperative about how co-ops are different and how they run.
It's a co-op formed by 1,600 workers. All these workers are the members, most of them, and all the money, all the assets that we can see here belongs to the workers.
Mondragon's worker-owned co-ops aren't limited to manufacturing. Following the death of Franco, Basques began to establish media organizations that worked in their own language, which had been banned under the dictatorship. Aitor Lagoma of the Goena Media Cooperative explained that it was second nature to found new publications and channels as worker-owned businesses.
We started, I have to go to 70s or before, when Franco dies and in 80s. We need a Basque language, media and production and all the things because we don't have anything. We just have national TV. People from in Arrasate, for example, was the first magazine in Basque language. After start in different towns around, like Basque magazines. So we decided to put them together and make a bigger and a stronger magazine in Basque language. It was a good improvement for them to read in Basque and understand and things like that. Maybe for us was quite easy or natural thing that in 2000 when we start with this project, make it like operative. I'm not gonna say like a tradition, but it's like something that we understand that if we own and we work better and we can maybe stronger.
The role that Basque identity has played and continues to play in Mondragon's resistance and culture is apparent everywhere we go. I interviewed Beneficial State Bank co-founder and CEO Kat Taylor about what she's been learning.
I came with a set of colleagues to join the delegation of Democracy Collaborative in visiting the cooperatives of Mondragon because we want to see how you sustain a culture, not just an economy of cooperative endeavors. And they have done that for over 70 years. So my colleagues and I are taking careful notes about how we could institute reforms in the capitalistic system of the United States to be more cooperative before it crashes us into climate disaster and social chaos. I hope in my lifetime I play a part in realigning finance in support of public values and that therefore the economy reflects that.
In the Basque country, cooperatively owned businesses and an ethos of solidarity are simply a fact of life. But in comparison to the U.S., the Basque region is a small, tight-knit sort of place. What would it take to build the same ethos in a place as large and diverse as the United States? At the end of our time in Mondragon, I asked Marjorie Kelly and delegation member Lauren Harris of the Kenneth Rainin Foundation.
Is it too simple to draw a parallel between some of the politics of the era in which Mondragon was born and the politics of now? How do you see this moment in compared to that one?
There's definitely a parallel. I mean, we're in hard times. People are looking for strong men all over the world today, just as happened during the Civil War and in that era. And in that earlier time, what we were seeing was the fall of the monarchy. And we passed through dictatorship and then on to democracy as a virtually universal form of government. I think something similar is happening now in the economy. What's dying is an economy built for the few, and hopefully we're moving to a new economy for the many.
You've talked about the divine right of capital.
Yeah, we lived for so long with the divine right of kings as though it was normal that a few people had blue blood and ruled over us. Well, today we think it's normal that the 1% holds all the assets. A couple of billionaires own more wealth than half of the people in the world. You know, that's absurd. And we need to recognize there is another way to organize an economy.
So how would you say we're doing in putting forward that other vision?
Well, I think we have a lot of work to do. And I think Mondragon gives us an example. I think we've heard that there are thousands of visitors here every year. I think we could do a lot more to help tell the story of why this model holds promise, why this example holds promise for the world. And I also think we have to really create new stories about what's possible in an economy that is a shift from an old extractive economy where a few people benefit from the labor of many to one where everyone's labor really matters and makes a contribution to their lifestyle and their life quality being improved.
But just to push you a little bit, aren't there some issues, aren't there some concerns about the question of localism, mutual aid, a community that hangs together, that is deeply networked, what happens to migrants? What happens to people that weren't here 50 years ago? People who look different or talk different or haven't been steeped in this culture?
Well, I don't think that... A democratic economy is a place where we all belong. It's not just for people of one race or one nation. So it's, I think there are lots of cooperatives that are very deliberately inclusive. So I think that that issue is one that needs to be integral to this new kind of economy.
A healthy democracy is one where everyone has voice, everyone makes a contribution, everyone's valued. The humanity is seen. We see diversity and we value it. We see and are intentional about including everyone in that democratic enterprise, and I think what's promising here, even with some limitations, is the possibility of reimagining our democracy through the workplace, and that having an effect on how we think about our democracy in the political space, in the public square. And I think that'll be the story of Mondragon 50 years from now.
From Mondragon, I traveled 300 miles to the east, to the city of Barcelona in the Catalonia region, another flashpoint in the Spanish Civil War. Franco banned Catalan culture and language, too. And as in the Basque Country, local people resisted through alternative modes of economics and hanging together. Ivan Moreau is a historian and an expert on the cooperative movement in Catalonia, past and future. We caught up with him in a building that served as a food co-op in the 1920s and 30s and was a site of resistance when the Civil War broke out.
Now we are in La Lleialtat Ensenca. It's an ancient cooperative of consumption.
What would have happened here in history?
Many things. They learned to organize in a collective form. We learn very much from our grandfathers and grandmother about how without state and without capitalism people can live very well.
The anarchist tradition.
One of them, the Republican tradition, the anarchist tradition, and the socialism tradition in Catalonia is important, of course.
What is happening here now?
And now we are trying to rebuild this kind of spatial organization, and we want to build a cooperative city. We talk about municipalism. For us, municipalism is not just a local political action made by the local governments. We understand municipalism is the collective action from the neighborhood. For us, this is an important idea because it's not another kind of politics top-down. It's bottom-up. So I think it's a different way to understand the city and to reappropriate all the city in a political, cultural, and economic way.
From the historic Lleialtat Sant Ansancà, I headed to the ECOS Cooperative, a very 21st century group of social enterprises with its own co-working space. Guernica Facundo Varicat is co-founder and coordinator of Lab Co-op, a co-op incubator housed at ECOS.
It started in 2011, after 2 years talking to each other, searching the way to put in common needs and interests and having a new way to intercooperate between us.
The social economy that you're talking about, the cooperative economy that you're talking about, is very different from what some people hear a lot about, which is the sharing economy or co-working like WeWork. How is a place like this different from WeWork?
It's nothing related. It's a very different focus on what economy should be. The relations should be equity, equality, democratic, participative, etc. For sharing economy is, okay, you have some resources as person or enterprise, okay, put in common to others and I will take benefits for it.
But no equity
with respect
to power or ownership or control. Does gender make a difference?
Social entrepreneurial economy and cooperatives are most part participate by women. We have also a long space to improve, also because we are in a patriarchal context.
But you're coming a long way.
Yes, we are trying.
This is the Laura Flanders Show. I'm Laura. You're listening to our very special report, Cooperation versus Authoritarianism in Spain. From the Basque Country to Barcelona in Catalonia, I've been looking at how people under occupation resisted the dictatorship of Francisco Franco. 80 years after the start of the Spanish Civil War, a tradition of cooperation and mutual aid live on. In the world's largest worker-owned co-ops, the co-ops of the Mondragon Federation, and in the commons culture embraced by the Barcelona in Comú movement of Ada Colau. Next, we explore how these models are adapting to contemporary circumstances, from online digital businesses to the notion of self-determination even at the neighborhood level. And I ask, how might newcomers and immigrants who bring a very different culture be embraced? Here's IDN. By Catalan pianist Albert Marquez, courtesy of the artist and thanks to Arturo O'Farrell. We'll be right back.
Franco called Barcelona the Red City on account of its unions and co-ops and social economy. Those were repressed brutally under the dictatorship, but they've been making a comeback, especially recently, under the city's first woman mayor, Ada Colau, and her party, Barcelona en Comú, which is dedicated specifically to the expansion and preservation of publicly shared assets and the commons.
It's an honor to be the public face of this collective process. And I will forever be deeply gratified by this collective process that is full of tenderness and love, and that challenges a system of injustice, and that has shown that we can indeed make a much better world.
Joan Subirats is the co-founder and spokesperson of Barcelona en Comú, one of the intellectuals behind the movement.
We try to avoid the idea that the only way to do politics is politics as usual in a very realistic way, you know? For example, the typical politics as usual is local government, it's not so important that state government. Well, why not? This idea that cities are probably more global than states, in that sense, is a very powerful idea. No? And we are trying to do this network of fearless cities and to create the conditions that municipalism is not, you know, a very low level of politics, but is a very important level of politics.
Mayo Fuster-Morel served as an advisor on one of Ada Colau's key initiatives, a digital commons for Barcelona.
What has happened here in the last 4 years that you've been involved in that you are proud of?
First thing is that we have the first woman mayor in the history of Barcelona after 150 men. That's the first change. The second element is that Barcelona Comú in the municipality has been promoting a lot commons-oriented digital economy. So we are seeing particularly the platform economy or collaborative economy, in which it's time the economic production and consumption is mediated by digital platforms. Mm-hmm. And these digital platforms can have the form of a very extractionist capitalist, like the case of Uber, in which put in question the workers' rights, or the case of Airbnb, which is confronting with the access to housing or the right to the city. What we see with the platform economy and the commons-oriented collaborative economy is the possibility of scale a lot this percentage of the GDP in order to promote the scalability of democratization of economy. For example, there is Som Mobilitat, which is a platform cooperative based on exchange of cars, bicycles, and motorbikes, which are electric and environmentally friendly. We also have Som Energy, which is around the energy sector, which is a a very essential sector of the system. So the difference in Barcelona is you have alternatives, in the sense that you have options. That's a position in which Barcelona is a worldwide reference, actually.
The commons and community are sometimes in tension, and that's part of what's been playing out here in Barcelona recently. This square,
Plaza Sant Joan,
was the site of many demonstrations in 2017. There's lots of tourists here now, but 2 years ago there were people protesting for Catalan independence. Those demonstrations were brutally repressed by the state government based in Madrid. The question of Catalan self-determination has become hotter than ever. What happens now to the agenda of the commons?
In the face of repression, the temptation is often to close ranks. In the most recent elections, Ada Colau and her Commons Party lost their majority when the people of Barcelona voted for the Catalan separatist party of Ernest Maragall. Maragall's appeal lay largely in his pledge to defend Catalan self-determination against the federal government in Madrid.
Your agenda, your plan for the city is what?
We're working for reaching the independence of Catalonia as a nation, as a political subject, one could say. Then one of the matters is which is the role of Barcelona as the capital of this country on all this process. As you know, we are in the middle of a conflict with the Spanish state. We have our political prisoners. Half of the political prisoners are members of our party. Then, well, here we are.
How does your experience in the history here affect your feelings about democracy and sovereignty and self-determination? Do you remember those days? Can you describe those days for our audience?
How do you, it's unforgettable, no? this period. It's probably we are inside our mind. What does it mean fighting against dictatorships, fighting for freedoms, for basic rights, etc.? I feel sincerely affected our main basic social individual rights now in the Spanish state. It's not a dictatorship, of course, but it's a democracy risk, of course it is. And Ada Colau progressive forces, they have not been so clear in favor, solidarity. But we are committed.
Though Ernest Maragall's party won a narrow popular vote, Ada Colau and the Barcelona en Comú movement were able to form a coalition government and stay in power. The movement for the commons continues, but the question of identity remains red hot. Can cosmopolitan Barcelona build a commons that really is for everyone? For answers to that question, I spoke to some whose roots in Catalonia do not go generations back. Senegalese immigrants Ababacar Tiak and Fatou Mbaye lead a co-op called Diom.
Here we have the Yambar brand that we have started to produce. It has been a few months since we created the brand. The clothing brand is being made with African fabrics with the European design.
What about the name?
Yambar, which means brave in our language, Wolof.
The history of the cooperative began with the boat people, who, as we know, came looking for alternatives. It could be looking for a job or economic opportunity. When they arrived, their only option was street vending, selling in the streets of Barcelona. Once established, they organized themselves into unions with the support of civil society and have been selling in the streets of Barcelona ever since.
Why do immigrants like yourself here have to be so brave?
I think we have to be brave because of the reality that when there are different cultures, there needs to be recognition of cultural minorities. Sometimes it is really difficult to get this recognition for minorities. People talk about integration and inclusion, but often it's not real. Minority issues get erased due to lack of opportunities because of the immigration system and the penal code.
Do women face special problems?
It is very hard for a woman to become a street seller so as to survive and help her family as well. It is also very hard for a woman to leave her country and arrive to a country which is not yours. With all the cultural differences, language variations, and other different aspects.
What is your opinion of Ada Colau?
My opinion is that if most of the Spanish places follow her example, it might be possible that the majority of immigrants could stop selling in the streets and have a job. Because all those street sellers have received opportunities in the city of Barcelona. Most of them have received their documentation and started working. I think we could say that it is because of Ada Colau that all this movement has emerged.
If the commons are for everyone, can solidarity go beyond localism and ethnic or regional pride? Can the successful strategies of history be celebrated and simultaneously updated for our contemporary global reality?
You live in a city where anarchists and trade unions and communists imagined they could beat the fascism of Madrid, Mussolini, and Hitler.
Yeah.
Is there a connection there? Do you feel a connection?
Joan Subirats, co-founder and spokesperson, Barcelona en Comú.
We are in the similar problems, if you want, inequality, a sense of our unprotection, a need to be to reinforce the capacity of fight of people, but at the same time, we have to be aware that the problems are different and their answers have to be different also.
We have to reinforce the power in the lifestyle, in the type of economy that we have, in the type of digital governance that we have and infrastructure.
Mayo Fuster-Morel, director of research at the IN3 Institute at the Open University of Catalonia.
And at the same time, having a more democratic institution. And I think we have to do both together. We have to think global, act local, build sovereignty outside of the institutions and also inside of the institutions.
And cooperation.
I think the story that the future will tell at this moment is one of renewal.
Lauren Harris, Chief Program and Strategy Officer at the Kenneth Rainin Foundation.
Of the possibility of thinking about how we imagine something that's different than today and work really hard to create that future together, opening up ourselves to the possibility of new voices, new contributors, and new people and ideas coming to bear to realize a future that's better than what we have today.
In Spain's November elections, the right-wing party Vox, which celebrates the dictatorship of Franco, doubled its support. Vox would crack down even more harshly on immigration and regional independence movements, making the history of Mondragon and Barcelona more relevant than ever. I leave with a burning question. Can our commitments to each other trump those who divide us? And can the circle of our common interest be drawn spaciously enough for all? It's a question we'll keep exploring in 2020 and beyond.
Thank you.
Thank you.